Drake has always been known to get in his feelings from time to time. It was the source of millions of memes during the early part of his career and has always been seen as part of his identity. But now, it seems that the emotional rawness is mutating into something darker, and in the wake of his defeat in the beef with Kendrick Lamar, it's got him acting out in ways that might result in permanent damage to both the public's perception of him and his legacy as a whole. Because at this point, he's starting to look like a sore loser. It's your boy Luesta, and this is why Drake has a sensitivity problem. Once Not Like Us was released, Drake seemed intent on downplaying the effects that song's success had on him. He claimed on The Heart Part 6 that the whole exchange was a quote-unquote good exercise. Even as a song that called him a PDF file beat his streaming records for the most streams of a hip-hop track in a single day on Spotify, and the fastest to reach 100 million streams. Within the blink of an eye, people he thought were his allies like YG and Billie Eilish were dancing to the track, and it was even getting played at elementary school birthday parties. So he tried to take it on his terms, rapping over the BBL Drizzy beat on a Sexy Red track and keeping it lighthearted on social media. At the time, the word from his camp was that he was taking the whole thing in stride. During an appearance on the Flagrant 2 podcast, Lil Yachty saluted Drake for how unbothered he was about it all.
He didn't give a f-
Really?
No, he was genuinely unfazed. Really? I respected it a lot, and I talked to him. That shit didn't bother him. I never saw him down, ever. I never saw him kicking his fucking foot, holding his head down. You know? And then to a point where I just stopped talking to him about it,
because I felt like
I was the one bringing him the negativity.
But as much as they tried, it looks like people are seeing through the facade and just think the response verifies everything KDOT said. Kendrick literally thought of everything in Euphoria, even down to Yachty being the one having to do the press run saying Drake wasn't upset. Ultimately, all of this is just words. It's actions that matter when determining how Drake is coping with the very public defeat at the hands of a long time enemy. And in those actions, we see that Drake isn't just struggling to handle it well, but also that his behavior follows a long-standing pattern of pettiness and immaturity that's been evident for years. First things first, let's look at the cancellation of TDE affiliate artists in Toronto. After Kendrick's pop-out show and Not Like Us video, in which most of the West Coast descended to support him, it seems like Drake has decided to take a zero-tolerance approach to those involved. It all began when Schoolboy Q, who is signed to TDE, was supposed to perform in his hometown of Toronto. Just hours before the show, Q broke the news on X to his fans. "They just canceled my show in Toronto. Canadian police don't want nobody from TDE performing." Note that initially, he put the blame on the cops. But in the very next post, he seemed to suggest that there was maybe someone else pulling the strings and that it might come from Drake's camp, while at the same time issuing stern warnings that he wasn't to be played with. Top was just with Wayne and Bay. Party Next Door just had a show at the Palladium. "If we wanted to get y'all, we would have done it. Now, when somebody gets hurt, don't cry." When a fan tried to claim that Schoolboy Q got Rick Rossed, referring to a recent event that we'll also discuss later in this video, Schoolboy Q said, "I don't think you know who I am. In fact, I don't think a lot of you know who I am." If this happened just once, it might have been a coincidence. But the same thing was about to happen to TDE's male R&B star, Sir. "So sorry to my Toronto fans. The show has been canceled. We're working to reschedule for a later date." Once again, Schoolboy Q was in disbelief. "Ha ha 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 ha. Take your ass home, boy. Sing on the bus. It's over with." But while it was hard for some to believe that it would be possible for Drake to pull strings like that, a little digging would reveal that the venue which both artists were meant to play is owned by Drake and Live Nation. Although Drizzy fans have attempted to downplay his involvement in history, the venue was promoted as his project from the very beginning in all of the press coverage. In fact, an article from Toronto Life titled "A Look Inside History, Drake's Much Hyped East End Concert Venue" provided a behind-the-scenes look, which revealed that the venue's artwork is pulled from Drake's own personal collection. Throughout the venue, there are high school photos of Drake, tour set lists, signed Godfather posters, and portraits portraits of Aaliyah and Virgil Abloh. With that kind of involvement in the space, and the shows likely being booked before the beef kicked off, it's entirely possible that Drake had a hand in preventing the shows from happening. Plus, it's not exactly hard to believe that a call like this was made from a man who allegedly filed a cease and desist for like that to prevent radio airplay, with possible recipients even surfacing in the form of leaked emails. And let's not forget, this is an individual who also reportedly entered streamer Trainwreck's chat to contest Kendrick's numbers for Not Like Us, as opposed to accepting the song had captivated the masses. Hey, can we take it back to 2022? Can you backdoor Eddie like Spotify backdoored the streams for that one song from that one guy, said Drake in the chat. All in all, the conduct that he's done in plain sight and what he's allegedly done behind the scenes means that a lot of people feel that everything Yachty said about him taking it to the chin is complete cap. His fans want him to believe that he's unbothered, and they are lying to themselves. He's such a sore loser. We see Kendrick entirely unbothered and off social media, while the other is voting on fan polls and proving Kendrick's lyrics right each day. Left facing the greatest opposition of his life, Drake's team is likely learning that the way he's attempting to cope with the fallout from KDOT's victory over him isn't doing him any favors. The real issue is that if you look back at Drake's recent behavior, there are growing signs of a volatile temperament. He's been losing his cool more often than not, acting childishly, and at times even embarrassing himself. If you have followed Drake's career closely, you'll know that he hasn't exactly been afraid to engage in petty behavior to mock his doubters and enemies. From giving Meek Mill a participation trophy for Wanna Know at OVO Fest, to dissing Kid Cudi when the man was literally in rehab, Drake has shown that anyone who has the nerve to challenge him might have to face the consequences. But where people like Cudi and Meek actively dissed him, the Drake of the past few years has gotten touchy to the point that he won't even accept criticism. Back when he released his album For All the Dogs, one man who had some reservations about the project was his former enemy Joe Budden. We documented the whole beef in a separate video and explained that since then, the two appeared to squash the beef. However, when Joe simply stated that he wanted to hear a bit more maturity from Drake after hearing the project, it sparked another conflict between them.
This is like he rapping for the children. Yo, dog, I had to look up how old this was when I finished listening to the album. You are 36. Your birthday is in 20 days. I Googled that too. You will be 37 years old. Get the fuck away from some of these younger niggas and stop fucking these 25-year-olds. I'm wanna hear adult Drake rapping for adult people.
No. You're not going to hear that.
That's my issue with him today.
You're not going to hear
rapping,
that.
He rapping for the kids, the streams,
the Instagram the comments, the algorithm. Yeah,
I'm rapping for this.
No, he ain't really rapping. He ain't trying to rap for me.
No.
Yeah, I just think I miss the Drake that was rapping for the rappers. I miss the Drake that when he dropped, the rappers hit him. Not these little fucking kids. I don't give a fuck about you and Kai Cenat. That's going to sound like, hey, go find some niggas your fucking age. Hang out with them. Get some of that sauce.
Instead of acknowledging that Joe maybe had a point, Drake responded by flaunting his wealth. You left music behind to do what you're doing in this clip because this is what actually pays your bills. You switched careers because the things that pop into your brain had you broke, living check to check. And the raps you wrote had 450 men showing up to your shows in Dusty and Nietzsche jeans to screw up their face to Mood Music 29 and pretend you are the GOAT. Please, to any artist that's doing what they feel is right, don't let these opinions affect your mindset after the fact. This guy is a poster child of frustration and surrendering. If you need to put it in simpler terms, Drizzy concluded, I own a 767. He owns a modest house in the 973 and flies first class on special occasions. From there, it just continued to get worse, with Drake sliding into Joe's DMs to make it clear that although his feelings were clearly hurt, he still wanted to make it clear that he felt he was above him.
It sounds like he thinks that this is like beef time. Like, I want to reiterate, I'm happier than I've ever been in life. I don't have small. I don't have beef. I don't even understand. I don't even get the message, but cool. Yeah, I'm not sure why you went crazy like that. I like the album. This ain't 2016. I got no beef. Get your shit off, though. As a matter of fact, nobody's happier for you than me. Because you bringing up my friends and the bitches I fuck, like, you know anything about that. Keeping music. I don't give a fuck what you listen to in your free time. because the people's opinion I care about don't have free time.
If this was an isolated incident, it could easily be seen as just a case of the wounds from their previous beef still festering. But instead, it would be part of a trend of Drake and his entire crew not being able to take any sort of challenge to do better or getting checked for poor behavior without it being met with animosity. Much like Joe Budden, Charlamagne and Drake hadn't always had the best relationship, but they seem to have buried the hatchet from the days where Charlamagne said there were three sexualities, which were gay, straight, and Drake.
Because I always say it's three sexual orientations out here. It's gay, straight, and Drake.
And just as Joe had his reservations about For All the Dogs, it was the Breakfast Club host suggesting that the track Slime You Out with SZA basically came and went, which had Drake hitting up IG to act up. You kinda wearing me out, G, like you really obsessed with me or something for years. Like you look in the mirror and wish you seen my reflection type shit. Whatever you gotta do to let it out, I'm sure your 435 loyal fans will stand by you, you fucking goof. Since then, there have been numerous victims, including none other than the Needle Drop's Anthony Fantano. Over the years, Anthony has never been the biggest fan of Drizzy's work. With the exception of If You're Reading This, It's Too Late, no album has ever earned an impressive score from the internet's busiest music nerd. And the less said about Fantano's views on his last few projects, the better.
Once again, I'll sum this up by saying this is just a very uninspired record from Drake. Not a whole lot going on here creatively. A few decent tracks here and there, but nothing coming together into a great project here. And feeling a light three on this one. Yeah, this new Drake album, it's not good.
Considering how unreceptive to criticism he is these days, it's actually surprising how long it took him to maliciously slide into the music critic's DMs. But it happened. And initially, Fantano tried to shoot him some bail with a video that suggested Drake had sent him a vegan cookie recipe. But for whatever reason, he just couldn't let it go, even when Fantano tried to spare him the embarrassment of real DMs, which Drake released himself.
They make Drake look like the most bitter, emotional, passive-aggressive loser I've ever seen. This man unironically posted this to his story like he did some. Your existence is a light one, and the one is because you are alive and because you somehow wifed a black girl. I just don't get what type of response you think that this is gonna breed from people. No one outside of the yes men and the peers that you have are gonna look at this and be like, ha, you really got him. They're gonna be like, oh, you watch this dude unironically who shits on your music, and this is the best response that you could come up with? A barrage of three messages that look like they came off the back of you drinking too early in the evening.
After that, there was Rap Radar's Elliot Wilson. After Drake hopped on platforms like Caleb Presley's Sunday Conversations and Bobby Altoff's Really Good Podcast to do interviews rather than taking the time to speak to actual hip-hop outlets, Elliot expressed that he would love to see Drake sit down for a serious chat with someone instead of engaging in comedic skits. But Drake wouldn't or couldn't see any validity in what he said, and once again, tried to sun him as footage emerged of Wilson interviewing Trippy Redd at a music festival. LOL man, shits on not coming to his platform for a second time, and now Elliot 10 toes doing Yes Jules run-up interviews at Rolling Loud. Just admit the youth took over Big Dog. Now, there are likely some Drake fans out there who think that everything up until now has been a perfectly valid response. The real problem, though, is that Drizzy isn't just leaving their issues in the past, he's dragging them into everything he does. And it's now gotten to the point where he's accusing regular journalists like Elliot of being a snitch just for doing his job during the Kendrick beef.
So I have to view it like I'm just really against him. So when he dropped Family Matters, it was just like, I was like, yo, you dropping this tonight? He'd be back like, yeah, whatever, LOL, like, da, da, da. And then he sent me a rat emoji, and I'm like, I didn't like that shit. Don't send me a fucking rat emoji. Like, it's funny, because Drake's the kind of dude that, even if he don't fuck with you, he still follows you. He's not an unfollow kind of dude. At the end of the day, you know, Kendrick clearly won. And I got the call. I got the calls, you know, from off, you know, OGs. You know, I'm not really welcome in Toronto right now. But, you know, like, I'm from New York.
Like you have phone calls?
Like, I grew up in New York City. You know you don't go through other people's projects, right? Your projects is your project. I would not go to Toronto if me and Drake weren't good. So that obviously makes sense. So, you you know, yeah, I just think it's a tough time, man. It's a tough time to manage.
At 53 years of age, Elliot Wilson is now being told that he can't enter a city because of how things have played out. And what's more shocking is that these days, he actually has valid reasons to feel threatened. In recent years, Drake has tried to hide his sensitivity behind a tough exterior, mainly by associating with real criminals. He's been linked to the groups like the Toronto-based Harlem Boys, Galloway Boys, the GGG Crew, and even the Hell's Angels. Many years after he was robbed in his own city in an alleged setup, the once soft rapper has now aligned himself with people who have real street credentials, and it was an infamous motorcycle gang who allegedly carried out his bidding by jumping Rick Ross in Vancouver. After Rosé, who has sent his own shots at Drake by coining the phrase BBL Drizzy and releasing Champagne Moments, played Not Like Us at a show, a Hell's Angel member by the name of Andres Terrazakis attacked Rosé and his DJ. And as the footage began to surface on social media, Drake was seen liking the video, letting the world know that he endorsed the violent response to Kendrick's song being played. Meanwhile, Rosé continued to troll his attackers.
Let me tell you something. When the first dude stepped up to Rosé, the little short fat one that looked like Bam Bam Bigelow from wrestling, when he stepped up, and then I squat down in his eyes and told him what I said, basically, boy, if I hit you, I'm going to see everything you ate for the last 2 days. His balls dropped out of his ass. He never said another word. He never did nothing. He was a straight buster. Then the nigga behind him said, I know MMA. And then I got hit with a drink. I'm still convinced ain't no nigga punch me.
But while Rick Ross made it out relatively unscathed, there have been a few other instances where those coming at Drake have received a real beatdown. Not necessarily from Drizzy himself, but rather from his crew. Back in 2016, Mo G began taking aim at Drake and his producer OVO 40 after allegedly receiving zero credit for the work that he did on various upcoming tracks from the label. Over time, he lashed out online.
Have you ever heard in the history of hip-hop a man who uses his creativity and helps make Billboard hits but doesn't get paid a dollar for it, one credit for it, and he's stuck in the hood? You know what I'm saying? That doesn't make sense, but exposing these n****s will make sense. F*** you, bitch. Oliver's a f***ing snake, double-headed snake.
Alright, just to let the world know, I never got paid no 12 grand. For the record, I'm not signed to OVO, and all my real fans have been rocking with me from day one. Check the history. I always delete all my posts, and I deleted it because I got bigger info coming to you right now.
As he threatened to leak Drake's music, Moji would be so badly beaten that it would result in a hospitalization, telling the world in an IG post that this is what happens when you speak from the heart, hashtag dirty industry. Since then, what was once a promising rap career has been derailed, reportedly all because he spoke out against Drake and his crew. In a now deleted Instagram post, Moji spoke out about his inability to get any work in the city after everything went down. Dear fans, I'm being blackballed. For the past 2 years now, I'm banned from 99.9% of studios in Toronto. I'm banned from all the clubs. I'm banned from doing shows. I'm banned from doing appearances. When I get lucky and find a studio, engineers mess up my whole thing. They turn up my headphones on full blast on some hater shit. My word, they move like Joe Budden. They don't mix and master my music. They refuse to do it. All types of hate I get. Toronto is a city full of dick riders and haters. My word on everything I love. And they wonder why I stopped rapping for 2 years. There's no opportunity. It's simple. Throughout these examples, we see the dangerous side of Drake's touchy mindset. Because now that he's no longer the kid from the suburbs and is a well-connected man with quote-unquote mob ties, he can take out his frustration in new, harmful ways. And unfortunately, it looks like his whole crew is responsible for this mindset. As it now appears that his producer, OVO40, has been throwing his weight around too. Recently, DJ, radio host, and comedian Cypha Sounds has shared a story about the producer threatening to attack him. It all stemmed from a social media post where he was tagged in that featured the track Not Like Us. Within hours of it going live, Cypha asked for it to be taken down, but this wasn't enough for 40, who said he would catch the hands the next time they were in the same place.
He said, "How about I go to your city and play a song where someone calls you a pedophile?" I'm like, "Okay." And he goes, "I knew you never liked us. I knew you never liked us. You act nice, but you're really a bitch. It's on site. When I see you, look at you, you're laughing. When I see you, I'm gonna smack you in the mouth.
But as is always the case, no one except for Cypher could really take it seriously and saw it as an extension of the OVO team and Drake struggling to come to terms with their heaviest defeat to date. 40 trying to act hard is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. They're going through it at the sweatshop. In the wake of the defeat, Drake and his crew have done nothing to prove that he isn't a sore loser. Instead, their conduct has been borderline childish and proved that they can't take criticism even when it may be valid. But going back even further, this really shouldn't be a surprise, because whether it was his personal or professional life, Drake has never been good at handling things when they don't play out the way that he hoped. To look at how Drake's sensitivity leads to issues when he doesn't get what he wants, then look no further at how he's handled the new partners of some of his former love interests. For example, after he got all hung up on Georgia Smith when she was 11 years younger than him, he shamed Georgia's new boyfriend Joel Compass for not being as successful as him, claiming, "Your boyfriend do what I do for a living, but way less wavy." Then, years later, he did the same thing to tennis icon Serena Williams. Previously thought to be good friends, Drake used to sit courtside at her games and very publicly thirsted after her. "I cannot wait to put it on you and make you sweat during our match this weekend." But years after their situationship fizzled out, he decided to randomly swipe at her husband, Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian, on the song "Middle of the Ocean" from her Loss, where he said, "Sidebar, Serena, your husband is a groupie. He claimed we don't got a problem, but no, boo, it is. You like coming for sushi. We might pop up on him at will like Suzuki." In response, Alexis let it be known that he was happy to be his wife's biggest supporter. Meanwhile, the internet dragged Drake over the coals. Imagine being the softest little baby in hip-hop and thinking you're coming out swinging against all these successful women who don't give a fuck about you. Drake is such a loser, acting like an incel. He fucking disgusts me. Really, it's no surprise that after all that went down, Serena was happy to dance on his grave at the ESPYs this year.
"Some of the best athletes in the world are right here in this room. Some of the strongest, fastest, and most skilled people ever are right here. And if I've learned anything this year, it's that none of us, not a single one of us, not even me, should ever pick a fight with Kendrick Lamar.
They not like us. They not like us. They not like us.
Hey! He will make your hometown not like you. The next time Drake sits courtside at a Raptors game, they're gonna Forrest Gump him. Sights taken.
They not like us. They not like us. They not like us."
But it's not just his love life where he struggled to hear the word no. It's been in his career as well. Because when the world overlooked his project that he worked so hard on in order to focus on one verse from KDOT, he couldn't handle it and basically went on a smear campaign to try and downplay it. Before the release of his album, Nothing Was The Same, Drake was adamant that this was the album that would ensure he got the respect he felt he earned, but had been withheld from him as he was still seen as an outsider. And this time around, he pushed the album like no project he's ever released before or since.
"I mean, I was just talking about it today, like my favorite part about promoting the album is just coming and being with the people, you know, so and especially look at the young people, like you look beautiful today, like it's great, like
right on.
So I mean, it's refreshing, you know, it's always.
If I could tell you one thing about this album, it's just that, you know, I'm proud of it. It's an extremely concise body of work. Is it my best album? No, my best album is going to be my next album, and I'll continue saying that for the rest of my career."
Although he kept it humble at that moment, Drake clearly had a lot of faith in the record, claiming it was the finest of 2013 as it was released.
"I do have the best album of the year, though, I will say that."
Nice! Better than Magna Carta.
"I think I just have one of the best bodies of work of the year. I worked hard on that thing, man.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm proud of it."
With the release date set for late September, it seemed like Drake was primed to dominate the narrative in the final months of 2013. But unfortunately for Drizzy and his ego, a guest verse from Kendrick that dropped in mid-August was still shaking the fabric of hip-hop by the time that he wanted everyone to pay attention to his record. When Big Sean dropped the song Control with Kendrick Lamar and J Electronica, he was not only overshadowed, but unleashed an atomic bomb on hip-hop with KDOT's verse. On top of controversy controversially declaring himself to be the king of New York, Kendrick told everyone that he was putting them on notice and he was coming for the crown whether they liked it or not. White tees and Nike Cortez, this red Corvette synonymous. I'm usually homeboys with the same niggas I'm rhyming with, but this is hip hop and them niggas should know what time it is. And that goes for Jermaine Cole, Big Crit Wale, Pusha T, Meek Mills, A$AP Rocky, Drake, Big Sean, J Electron, Tyler McMillan. I got love for you all, but I'm trying to murder you niggas. With one verse, Kendrick let it be known that his only goal was to be recognized as the greatest, but it was all love. While those he left out felt salty, a lot of the rappers he name-checked understood what he was getting at and felt that he should feel that way.
You know, the control thing, man, like, you know, as soon as he saw me, he said, yo, thank you so much for just, you know, for understanding and not taking the verse the wrong way.
I like that.
And I was like, oh, I was like, Kendrick, you don't know I'm different, bro. I understand. Like, I listen to rap.
Right, right. I understand. It's the sport of hip hop.
It's the sport of hip hop. He shouted out his peers and he was like, yo, you know, I want to take something from your fan base, Mac Miller's fan base. You know, I want to take all of that. When is that not the mission?
But while colleagues like Pusha T appreciated the friendly sparring, Drake was left distraught that the whole thing was about to be brought up in every interview before Nothing the Same's release. And when it did, he came off as nothing but salty and, you guessed it, overly sensitive.
Nah, I feel like that's it. It's like, you know, he's the new guy to love. And of course, I mean, rightfully so, he's super talented, you know, but... Thank you. But he's like, you know, he is the underdog that's extremely hungry. You know what I'm saying? And he's doing his thing really well. And that verse was, he's giving people like moments, you know, like that verse was a moment to talk about. Are you listening to it now at this point in time? Okay. And then it was real cool for like, you know, a couple weeks. But, like, if I asked you, for example, like, how does that verse start?
After very clearly showing his hand with those comments, Drake then tried to walk it back as if he didn't care. But the energy was still one of disdain for what K-Daw had accomplished as he tried his best to downplay it and sun him.
Now, mind you, it'll go on in Complex and Rap Radar, give it, like, verse of the millennium and all that shit or whatever. But, like, I'm just saying, it's like, you know, I remember, like, somebody like asking me, you know, or maybe it was you that was like, is Kendrick Lamar your biggest competition like in this generation or whatever? Yeah. And I think that Kendrick has like the utmost potential, man. Like, you know, I see Kendrick tomorrow, I'm gonna dap him. I didn't feel a way about that verse. I get it. I get the moment. Like, you know, he's a good guy. And like, I know that that verse had no malice behind it because I saw him 5 days later at the VMAs and it was all love. So it's like, he didn't come on there on some wild, like, yeah, I'm in New York, fuck everybody, don't look at me. Like,
I'm the king.
So it was one of those things. It's like, I almost wish he had come in there on that shit because I kind of lost like a little respect for the sentiment of the verse. If it's really fuck everybody, then it needs to be fuck everybody. It just can't be halfway for the sake of the people. But you know what I'm saying? Like, for real, that's just how I feel. I still like... When it comes to competition, I'm more worried about consistency. I'm more worried about bodies of work.
As the press run for his album progressed, Drake just kept letting his feelings be exposed whenever he was asked about it. Such as when his Billboard cover story led to a question about K-Dot. I didn't have anything to say about it. It just sounded like an ambitious thought to me. That's all it was. I know good and well, Lamar's not murdering me at all in any platform. So when the day presents itself, I guess we can revisit the topic. Meanwhile, Kendrick kept playing it cool when asked if there was any tension between them, while for the first time acknowledging that Drake was not like him.
It wasn't no issue from the jump. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people talk about beef, it's just a whole nother dynamic. I can't see myself going bar for bar with Drake. You know, we're two different type of artists.
While it'd still be a decade until Kendrick really did go bar for bar with Drake, he'd clearly heard Drake's attempts to discredit the verse and its impact. So when K-Dot appeared in the BET Awards cipher alongside his TDE family, he seemed to take a little jab at Drake's feelings about the verse, even referencing his beloved album in the lyrics. Bitch and cold, yeah, and nothing been the same since they dropped Control and tucked the sense of the rapper back in his pajama clothes. Ha ha, jokes on you, high five. With that show-stealing verse, Kendrick continued to seize the agenda. So, by the time that Drake sat down for another cover story in 2014, he was still being asked about KDOT, and in the process, he finally admitted that the whole thing had derailed his attempts to promote his record. Hilariously, he also suggested that he was above the whole thing. Where it became an issue is that I was rolling out an album while that verse was still bubbling. So, my album rollout became about this thing. What am I supposed to say? Nah, we'll be buddy-buddy. Mind you, I never once said he's a bad guy or that I don't like him. I think he's a fucking genius in his own right. But I also stood my ground as I should. And with that came another step. Which then, I have to realize I'm being baited and I'm not gonna fall. Michael Jordan doesn't have to play pickup to prove that he could play ball. No offense. But I'm not gonna give you the chance to shake me necessarily, cause I feel great. There is no real issue. Despite the level of petulance he displayed in handling this instance of Kendrick overshadowing him, things were about to get even worse for Dre. Just look at his response to losing the 2014 Grammy Award for Best Rap Album to Macklemore. When the Thrift Shop Rapper picked up the honor, there was a lot of discussion about how it probably should have gone to Kendrick for his album Good Kid, Mad City. So much so that Macklemore actually texted him to apologize. That left Drake, who had already had the promotion of Nothing Was the Same, overshadowed by Kendrick's control verse, resentful. So, what did he do? He lashed out. That shit was whack as fuck, he said in an interview. I was like, you won. Why are you posting your text message? Just chill. Take your W. And if you feel you didn't deserve it, go get better. Make better music. It felt cheap. It didn't feel genuine. Why do that? Why feel guilt? You think those guys would pay homage to you if they won? This is how the world works. He made a brand of music that appealed to more people than me, Hove, Kanye, and Kendrick. Whether people want to say it's racial, or whether it's just the fact that he's tapped into something we can't tap into. That's just how the cards fall. Own your shit. To name just Kendrick? That shit made me feel funny. No, in that case, you robbed everybody. We all need text messages. On the other hand, Kendrick Lamar dealt with the situation graciously, even suggesting that Macklemore didn't need to do it whatsoever. Across several interviews, KDOT said that the heist rapper had nothing to apologize for. It's well deserved, he told XXL. He did what he did, man. He went out there and hustled and grinded. Everything happens for a reason. The universe comes back around. That's how it go. That text surprised me, but Macklemore is a genuine dude, he said on another occasion. However it panned out, I wish him much success. He touched people's souls, and no one could take that away. Really, the whole Grammy moment was incredible. Not everyone gets that shot. Here, we see a huge difference between how to take an L without looking like a total sore loser, and how to make that loss seem like a win by retaining your dignity. Because when it comes to not damaging his reputation when things don't go his way, it's really never been his strong suit. Then we have his resentment towards The Weeknd. Back when his fellow Toronto artist first emerged, Drake was undeniably vital in helping to bring him to mainstream audiences, even tweeting out his lyrics to Wicked Games from House of Balloons. From there, he enlisted The Weeknd to help him write on Take Care, with The Weeknd later admitting that he sacrificed several of his own songs for Drake's project. But Drake showed his true colors when, instead of signing to OVO, The Weeknd opted to launch his own imprint with Republic. In response, Drake was on Twitter sounding somewhere between a vengeful mob boss and a spiteful ex-girlfriend when he said, "You won't get away with just a thank you. You owe me a favor." Since then, Drake has tried to downplay the extent of The Weeknd's work on Take Care, while also acting like he never felt a way in the first place.
With Abel, we had our run. You know, we had our moments on Take Care, and you know, my features on his projects. And he just really came to me at one point, came to all of us, and was like, "Look, like I don't want to sign under another artist because I feel like I could be just as big or bigger, and I want to start my own thing." And it was never like I'm always excited. Always super happy for all those guys.
Now, with the benefit of hindsight, The Weeknd knows just how much of a bullet he dodged, declaring that, "I thank God that I never signed my life away," on All to Myself. Because if we learned anything about Drake's temperament in recent years, it's that if Abel never threatened to get bigger than him, it seems highly likely that he would have snuffed it out. And to add the cherry on top to prove just how sensitive Drake was about his whole ordeal with The Weeknd, we can even see how bitter he was when he released his 100 gigs for your head top, which included tons of behind the scenes and unreleased footage of him creating albums and touring. In one of the videos, it showed Drake refusing to dap up The Weeknd when meeting him backstage. Take a look for yourself.
Good to see you.
You too, man.
Yes, sir. How are you?
What's up,
boy? Yeah, fine?
Of course, yes. Bro.
almost cried four times. That's why I hope comes up. Oh, okay, what's up, man? Yes.
Yes, sir.
Glad you came.
So, where does this mindset in Drake come from? Well, the most logical answer is that it's always been in him. And now that he's in the driver's seat, it has mutated into something far more malicious. Back in the day, Drake was open about the fact that he wasn't the toughest guy.
Melissa asks, tweets, Drake claims he wasn't cool in high school. What made you uncool?
I just didn't, it wasn't that I wasn't cool, it was that the kids that were cool, I wasn't on their wavelength, which made me sort of uncool, I guess. So like, you know, it was, I just always felt like an outsider. When I was in Forest Hill, you know, it was an all Jewish school, like, and just being biracial, but still being Jewish. So I was like kind of connected to the kids, but like sort of distant. And when, you know, when kids are young, they don't necessarily comprehend everything.
Right.
So it can get a little cruel and a little mean.
You get teased a lot?
Yeah. I mean, I got it, you know. I got it, definitely.
He even opened up about it in the past, where he explained that he pined for his acceptance in hip-hop. I used to be so self-conscious about the strikes against me, being from Canada, being on a TV show, being super light-skinned. Now, it gives me the chance to accept that I am something different. Maybe I don't need to be the next Kanye, maybe I don't need to be the next Wayne. I could just be the first Drake. But where that would usually be seen as a weakness, that kind of vulnerability actually worked to his benefit, rather than the spiteful anger that it has morphed into today. As a result, people now feel the fame has changed Drizzy for the worse. This Drake should have stayed. Drake was much more authentic here. People could clown him for being soft or uncool or whatever, but at least he was being real to himself. Not the fake tough guy mafia Don he pretends to be now. Instead of being mocked for his perceived softness, Drake is now experiencing what it feels like when your entitled attitude means that people are now reveling in your downfall and see your attitude for what it is.
They want the brother pass. Like, they want, like, if they want, like, the relationship pass where, like, if you're cool with them in the industry, they feel like you cannot like the opposition's music. You can't be honest. You have to, like, dick ride them. That's not okay, bro. That's not healthy. That's not reality. That's sore losing mentality. You're Drake. You should be greater than this. You're better than this. You lost. Move on. And if you're going to be tight at people and you're going to be mad at people's reactions, then come back with a fucking banger. Come back. Keep the battle going. Instead, you drop Sexy Red, yeah, I love you, you're my everything, BBL Drizzy, and then now you happen on a Toronto comedian parody song? The shit's not adding up. Like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, is this guy, like, he's gonna DM us next? He might DM me now after seeing this clip.
Left taking L after L, it's reached the point where DJ Scheme played Not Like Us in the very club that Schoolboy Q and Sir were banned from, and had a whole Toronto audience singing along to every single word.
So, nigga, for him to say that, I'm like, nigga, you sounded real federal. Nigga.
Real feminist, right?
I don't think Academics even got a whip, dude.
His mom's Cameron.
He definitely is a minivan type of nigga.
With the auto sliding door?
Yeah, auto sliding door.
Alongside Q enjoying what happened, the real problem for Drake is that because of how he's behaved in recent years and how he's conducted himself as the fallout from the beef has transpired, he stopped being a sympathetic figure. In fact, to some younger listeners today, it seems like it's no longer even cool to like Drake. I'm telling y'all, the kids aren't messing with Drake like that. It's becoming uncool to like Drake very quickly. This is very bad for Drake in every single way. Just a few years ago, it seemed impossible that the public might turn on Drake so long as he kept providing hits. But as his rash behavior has spiraled out of control, we might be on the precipice of that. And based upon all the evidence presented, the only person he has to blame for it is not KDOT or any of his critics, but himself and the enablers that let him get to this point.